This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodl Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
I'm here with Mark Thompson, the resident astronomer for BBC's The One Show and the Night Sky Guide on Stargazing Live. Thank you very much for being on the Jodcast.
No problem at all. It's good to be involved in this.
The first thing I thought I might ask you is, I know that you're a qualified pilot.
Yes.
How on earth did you end up becoming a TV astronomer?
Well, I've been an amateur astronomer for 25 years or more, so I've had a passion for the night sky for many, many years. I took up flying as a hobby probably around 10 years ago, and so I've qualified as a pilot since I've become an astronomer, but astronomy has always been the passion, and the role as the TV astronomer has just morphed over the years. The pilot thing has just been secondary to all of that.
Have you ever been able to do astronomy from a plane?
Funnily, yes, I was once, if the CIA are listening, I don't want them to know about this, but I was once on an instrument flying lesson, so I had an instructor on board as well, so that, you know, they had another pilot who knew what they were doing, which is good, and I should have been at the time paying attention to all the instruments in the aircraft, which, you know, instrument flying is chiefly about looking at instruments, and I happened to catch out of the corner of my eye Venus. We were above the clouds, and this was just at twilight, just above the clouds were looking sort of lovely velvety kind of purpley colour. It looks stunning. And then Venus was just hovering in the sky, just with a crescent moon nearby as well. And I have to say, my attention was just grasped for a few moments while I was looking at that, instead of paying attention to the instrument. So yes, I have. Legally, no, never, of course not. Focus on the job. But yes, I have had my attention grabbed on a few occasions, but not in a dangerous way, of course.
You're kind of a compulsive stargazer,
yes.
Then.
Can't let it go.
What is it about actually looking up at the stars whatever's out there in space that really appeals to you?
I think the thing that appeals to me is the enormity of it all, and to a degree, the fact that the more we learn, the more we realise we know nothing. We don't know nothing. We do know an awful lot about stuff, but you know, the more we actually pick up about the universe, we find actually there's still shed loads more we still need to learn. So it's a bit about the unknown, and it's also about the physics behind the stuff that we're looking at. I mean, we can look at the Andromeda Galaxy, which you can see in the sky at this time of year, and it's faint, it's fuzzy, it doesn't look all that impressive, but it's a galaxy with about a trillion stars in it, and the light's taken about 2.5 million years to get here, so you're looking back in time. It's all that kind of stuff, so it's knowing actually what you're looking at rather than just purely looking at the object itself.
Yeah, so when you can look at something from your back garden that's just completely mind-boggling.
Absolutely. I mean, there are objects you can see through an amateur telescope where the light left before the Earth was even here. So, you know, light has taken over 5 billion years to get here. So, you know, anyone can go outside in the garden tonight with a basic telescope, look at certain galaxies, and the light left that galaxy before the Earth had even formed. And that is just wacky. So you're looking back in time when you're doing astronomy, even amateur astronomy. The sun is, you know, the sun's about 8.5 minutes away. Mm. So if the sun were to just disappear, we wouldn't know about it visually for about 8.5 minutes. And so, you know, kind of stuff is just really bizarre. Because we're so used to, you know, distance you to from me, you know, it takes nanoseconds, probably less than that, for light to get to me. But in the universe, it takes time for light to get places.
Yeah.
Weird.
You get the idea of how space and time are bound up together.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you do. Totally.
So coming back to popular astronomy.
Yes.
Do you think, in terms of popularising astronomy now, that new user-driven services, kind of blogging and podcasting and social networking sites, that are more important in spreading popular astronomy than the traditional media like TV?
I would say as important, certainly. I mean, I think, when, you know, you've got, I don't know if I can advertise on here, but you know, you've got Twitter. You know, that's a fantastic system. There's projects out there. There's a project called Meteor Watch. I don't know if you've seen it, where people can tweet when they see a meteor, and that then gets pumped through to a map and get alerts for space station flypasts. There's all sorts of stuff that you can get. So I think TV is good for sort of general information and for getting people out there, perhaps really, you know, wowing them with the graphics and the multimedia side of it. But, you know, I think the whole sort of technology stuff, I mean, you can get apps on iPhones and on HTC phones, all that kind of stuff, and they show you what you can see in the sky. I mean, I was using it last night because it was cloudy. I just wanted to kind of get my head around where Jupiter would be broadly, so I couldn't see a damn thing out there.
Yeah.
And I fired up an application on the phone and just said, you know, it's actually going to be right over there. So I knew exactly where it would be, so I didn't have to waste time, you know, tarting around trying to think, oh, no, is it over there? Is it over there? So all those applications and the technology is brilliant, and I think that's where it's good to help people learn the sky.
Yeah. And did you come into your role that you've got now through those kind of new services?
Not really. I mean, it's kind of come about since then. I did a lot of work with local media. That's back in Norfolk where I live. So I did a lot of work with the local newspaper, local TV. I've only been involved in probably more national astronomy stuff for probably about 2.5 years now. So I'm quite new into it. But even in that time, that technology has changed dramatically, and it is now so much easier for people to get involved in doing astronomy. And that's the beautiful thing about it all now.
When you're not doing TV sort of work, what kind of astronomical things do you like to do?
Oh, crikey, all sorts of things. I've kind of got a passion for imaging, so taking photographs of the sky. So one of the things I do when I'm not doing astronomy, if you like, is probably tampering around with pictures, making them look pretty.
Yeah.
And I use the word tampering a bit reservedly because, you know, some people think, well, you know, if you're enhancing pictures, then you're changing them from what they really are. But you're not, you're actually just enhancing them. And a good analogy, yeah, I think, is the old red eye reduction.
Mm.
You've all seen photographs of people that have been taken, flash has gone off, and you've got the little red pupils in people. And people have no problem with just, you know, getting that airbrushed out or using the flash reduction, yeah, on or whatever. So there's no difference. What you're doing is you're just making the picture look appealing and look more, you know, more scientifically accurate.
Well, it's just like having better eyes, isn't it?
Yeah, sometimes. It is. And, you know, in a sense, a telescope is doing that for you as well, because a telescope is acting like a funnel for your eyes. So if people are going to be so precious about it, you shouldn't even use a telescope. You know, put them all away, forget about them. You're tampering with what you can see. So, you know, a telescope is affecting and changing what you can see in the eye, and it makes your eye as big as the telescope. I mean, the pupil is about, I don't know, 2.5-3 millimeters across, whatever it is when it's dilated. And if you use telescopes maybe 4, 5, 10, 12 inches across, you've got an eye that big. So, you know, all of a sudden you're going to see so much more information.
It was amazing on Stargazing Live actually to see the guide to how you could easily take astrophotographs.
Yes.
Some of those methods were so non-specialist.
Yeah,
but they produced such good results.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people know that, certainly in the astronomy world, know you can DSLR camera, plug onto the back of the telescope or stick it on a tripod, get constellation shots. But the bit that, for me, some of the images I saw, you know, the guys who just got a bog-standard compact camera, stuck it to the eyepiece of a telescope and pushed the button, you know, how much more basic can you get?
Mm.
And there was a stunning image of Saturn near the limb of the moon. And that was an incredible picture.
I saw that one.
Now when you think, I don't know, a couple hundred years ago, nobody could have done that. And for someone to just got probably a 20 quid camera out of, you know, out of the chemist down the road and just got that snap just as simply as that, it was incredible. So, yeah, I mean, there are some really easy techniques people can use. You can go to the more complex methods, you know, webcam imaging.
That's not that complex.
It's not
webcams are quite...
Yeah, webcams are easy enough to use. And, you know, as a clip showed, there's really simple software out there that will help you do it. So as long as you've got a webcam and a telescope, you can get pictures. Probably the hardest thing to do is to get the object in the centre of the telescope, so you've got it in the middle of the webcam field, because chips in the webcam, I've never seen them, they're about, I don't know, a centimetre square.
Mm.
So trying to get the image right in the middle so that when you stick the webcam in, you've got it. Because believe you or me, when you're trying, if you're looking at a webcam image or live feed from a webcam, and all you can see is black sky and no guidance to know whether you're just above it or just below it, you can waste hours trying to get the thing in the centre of the field of view.
But persistence pays off.
And, you know, you can my eyepieces have got crosshairs on them, so you know you've got things right in the middle. But, yeah, absolutely, persistence does pay off. And just with webcams, I mean, I've seen some stunning images of Jupiter and Saturn almost competing with spacecraft images.
Wow.
You know, there's some amazing images out there. And it's all done with amateur equipment, and that's just incredible.
So as the real stargazer among the presenting team on
the
Stargazing
only
Live,
stargazer
the,
among the
should
team.
We say the real astronomer?
Yeah, say that. The others are just theoretical physicists, and physicists aren't they? They don't count, they're not real.
I was going to ask you if you taught them a thing or two
you
about
know,
how to
they
look
only
the
ever came outside for about 5 minutes on both shows so far. That's shocking.
It was cold out of the first
one. Yeah, tell me it's cold. I've been out there for hours. I've even got down there, I'm going on a rant, I apologise. Even got down there heated boots.
Oh.
They're a thing of the future. They have three heat settings, low, medium and high, and they will keep my feet toasty warm for 8 hours.
How do you keep your fingers warm when you're playing with a telescope?
Yeah, they get cold. It's called gloves. It's
right.
Quite a new thing. You can get heated gloves. You can get heat, but I haven't gone on that extent. I'm hard.
Yeah, okay.
I can take the cold. It doesn't affect me.
Would you say Dara O'Brien and Brian Cox are not very hard and not tough?
No, they're softies, both of them. And I hope you listen to it, both of you. It's quite funny because on the show a number of times they've been speaking to Liz over in Hawaii and saying how cold it is over here in Macclesfield. They think it's cold sitting in a nice warm studio. Yeah, get them outside, then we'll see. But it's good fun. It's good fun.
It is. Well, I think sometimes when it's cold, you get really good seeing, don't you?
You do.
You really see the sky.
The best. Unfortunately, last night was colder than Monday night because there was a bit of wind, and of course you get the good old wind chill factor was affecting it. So last night it was cold and it was cloudy, and with the exception of the meteor, it disappeared behind my head, which I never saw.
Until that was a brilliant moment.
I must have been the only person in the entire country who didn't see that meteor, and I was gutted. But it was superb for the show, you know. If you're going to have a cloudy night, then you want something just to spice it up a little bit, then yeah, put a meteor behind the guy's head who just said it's cloudy and you can't see anything. That'll work all right. But Twitter went mad after that as well. We had loads of them coming through, which is great. And again, you know, it just shows how the interaction between TV and all these new media is fantastic. I mean, the Twitter hashtag that we've got has been going mental. It trended worldwide on the first night and was fourth in the world. And, you know, that is incredible for a UK-based show as well.
So you can really see what people are saying to you as well about
Absolutely you can. Yeah. I mean, I have to say, I've not gone through the entire list of, and the, you know, we had email questions have come in. We had about, I think, 7,000 questions came in via email on the first night.
Wow.
And so, you know, trying to fit, you know, just to get a sample of those, you know, it's been a fantastic response. It's just great how the people who are watching the show can interact with the show. And, you know, that is fantastic.
Yeah. What I was going to ask you perhaps the last thing is, sometimes people refer to astronomers as astrologers.
Yes, they do.
I was wondering if anyone's ever asked you to tell their fortune.
Yes. Well, not that in so many words, but people will quite often say, oh, you're an astrologer, are you? And then they'll even say, oh, you're an astronomer, are you? I'm a Leo. I'm like, no, astrologer. So, yes, I get loads of people will say, oh, you do? Oh, yeah, I'm into that. Yeah, I'm a Leo. Yeah, what are you? No. So, yes, I get loads of that. Loads and loads and loads of that.
Okay.
But they only do it once.
Right.
They only do it once.
You only get one chance.
Then they learn. Then they learn never to do it again.
You teach them of all the constellations.
I just beat them up and then they're fine about it after that.
Well, I suppose going back into sort of ancient times, some of the first observers were astrologers. I don't know exactly what it was that motivated people to try and start making those kind of predictions. Is it just that you see something that's so amazing you think this must mean something?
I think if you sort of go back to, I don't know, 5, 6, 7,000 years when they had no concept of anything going on. We had a partial eclipse of the sun the other morning, although we only just caught the thing here. We were up at 6 o'clock filming for it, and it was cloudy and wet and horrible. But if you imagine the sun's up there, total solar eclipse, all of a sudden, the sun disappears.
Terrifying.
I mean, it's going to scare the living daylights out of you. So immediately, you're going to try and put some kind of context around it. Because back then, they believed in gods and all that sort of thing. So you can understand absolutely why people would have attributed that to, you know, some kind of higher being trying to communicate or whatever. And, of course, they'd sacrifice people to the sun that's disappeared, and then the sun comes back again.
Mm.
So it works. We must be right. We'll do it again next time. So you can see how all that kind of builds up. And you're right, I mean, astrology was the first subject that was around. Astronomy didn't come for a lot of years. And it was only until we started to understand and ask the questions around what was really going on in the universe that astronomy evolved as a science, and the two finally sort of diverged. It's just a shame that a lot of people still follow astrology.
Yeah, well, it must say something to people's psyche that they want to believe.
People like to have something to believe on. If someone says to you, hey, you're going to have a cracking day today, you'll believe them. If someone says, yeah, you're going to have a rubbish day, just stay at home. You think, yeah, what do you know? Just shut up. So people will like to hear good things. And you never read, they do read horoscopes for the record, but you never read a horoscope that says your day is going to go from bad to worst. You know, you're going to lose your job. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. Just give up now. You know, do you know, you never see bad stuff in them. So you kind of have to question, is it? That's rubbish. I'm going on now.
But what you can see up there is interesting enough in itself.
It is.
Isn't it, really?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And interestingly, there's more people now that believe in astrology in some way than have ever done before. And that worries me because we're more scientifically aware than we've ever been.
Mm.
And yet there's more people that kind of have a belief in astrology. And that's shocking. But you're right. In the sky, there's so much really interesting stuff that we can prove. So you'd kind of hope people would start to think about that rather than whether it's going to, you know, win the pools or the lottery next week.
Right, well, maybe it's the very last question I should ask you. What's your most favourite thing to look at in the night sky?
Except meteors that are behind me.
Meteors that are in front of you. Probably
Saturn. Now, I mean, I'm not a planetary person. I've got more of a passion for the stuff in the outer edges of the universe, the fainter stuff, it's not as immediately impacting visually. But it is Saturn, you know, Saturn was the first thing I ever saw through a telescope, and it stuck with me ever since, and that's 20 odd years ago now. And so I think you can never fail, never tire to look at planets because they're big, they're bright, they're easy to find, and they just look incredible. They look like they should look. But, you know, yeah. all the other stuff like the galaxies and the star clusters, you kind of have to rely on imaging techniques to be able to show them for what they are. Visually, they don't look like an awful lot. So, there's a lot of messing around. But a planet, you point a telescope at it, boom, there it is.
Seeing it for yourself is something else.
It is. You can see images from spacecraft and from Hubble Space Telescope, all that kind of stuff. But to see it yourself live, you know, to a quote, stargazing live, to see it for real is the most incredible thing you'll ever have.
Brilliant. Well, cool. Perhaps we can wrap it up there. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.